The stadium buzzes with electric energy, the kind that only a grand sporting event can evoke. Thousands of fans, clad in colorful team jerseys and waving flags, fill the seats, their anticipation palpable. The air is thick with excitement, punctuated by the rhythmic stomping of feet. The giant screens above the stands flash vibrant graphics showcasing highlights and player stats as the pre-game show reaches a climax. Suddenly, the stadium lights dim and a hush falls over the crowd. A dramatic, bass-heavy beat pulses through the sound system, building tension with every note. Then, in an explosion of pyrotechnics and spotlights, the first team strides onto the field. The fans erupt into a cacophony of cheers and applause, their voices merging into a thunderous roar that shakes the very foundations of the stadium. As the team members take their positions, their faces projected onto the big screen, the crowd's energy just intensifies. Moments later, the opposing team emerges from the tunnel, greeted by an equally rapturous applause. The atmosphere is electric, as fans wave banners emblazoned with their favorite players' names and team logos. This is no ordinary sporting contest. These are elite esports athletes ready to compete in a high-stakes video game tournament. The two teams take their seats, adjusting their headsets and controllers as the commentators' voices echo through the arena, hyping up the impending clash. The giant screens switch to a countdown and the crowd begins chanting in unison, their voices reaching a fever pitch. As the countdown hits zero, the game begins and the stadium explodes once more, this time with cheers and shouts of encouragement for the digital warriors on the screen. Of course, you might have thought when I started talking that this was a football game or a hockey or basketball, but no, this is the crazy world of esports, Amit.
So, with that introduction, welcome to yet another episode of Mike and Amit Talk Tech. Obviously, we are talking about esports here, so let me just take a step back, Mike. You're telling me I'm buying a ticket, I'm wearing a jersey, I'm carrying a flag, I'm going into a stadium to watch other people play video games? Are you serious?
It does sound kind of crazy, right? Why would you want to do that? But, you know, how different is it really that, you know, wearing a jersey, going into a stadium and watch, you know, 22 men kick a ball around or, you know, for 90 minutes? It's just kind of a different version of that. And for some of us of a certain age, it seems a bit crazy. But for younger people, this is something they're doing anyway. You know, they're really engaged because they play the same games that these professional teams are playing. And this is not small. I mean, you know, global revenue 2024 this year is going to be over $2 billion U.S. dollars, expected to rise over $9 billion by 2030. They're getting money through sponsorships. That's about 40% of the revenue, marketing rights, advertising, merchandise, ticket sales. And if you consider betting revenue from betting on these games, you know, it's at least double that number. So it's a big deal. There's over half a billion, so 500 million people around the world actively follow esports. It's a global sport, most popular in the Asia Pacific region at the moment, but there's a huge following also in Europe, in North America, and around the world.
So when exactly did this start, Mike? Because look, I mean, I've played video games on the side. You know, I remember playing, I think, Dune and, you know, some of these old-fashioned video games. You know, Prince of Persia was big. I think I'm dating myself a little bit with those names. World of Warcraft, I've heard of. When did this whole thing start? And I mean, are there like specific games that these guys play? I'm assuming they don't go up there and play Tetris, right? I mean, so there must be some specific games that these guys play up there.
There are. And, you know, the beginnings, we've got to go back into the 1970s, back as far as 1972. The first video game competition that we know about was at Stanford University. It was a game called Space War. I have no idea what this game was like. And Amit, you know, can you guess what the winner received? A year subscription to Rolling Stone magazine. That was the grand prize. You know, then we move on, right? And I can imagine that you're a secret gamer, and so in the early 1980s you had Atari with Space Invaders, and that really got things going. There were tournaments then attracting, you know, 10,000 participants across the world. The 1990s, it gets even bigger. Nintendo had a Nintendo World Championship at that point. Blockbuster Video, there's a blast from the past, right? Had a gaming championship, you know, for NBA Jam and Sonic the Hedgehog. These games back then, they're not played today, by the way, in esports. And that was the first in the 1970s. So the late 1990s, they had the Cyber Athlete Professional League. So the first professional league was established for games like Counter-Strike, which is still being played today, Quake, which is the kind of successor to Doom. But then it really kicked off in the 2000s when the Koreans, if it was really the Koreans who made this thing major, the Korean Esports Association started in 2000. The first Esports World Cup was held in 2003. So it starts getting bigger. But I think that probably the biggest change that happened was in 2010, 2011, when Twitch was created. So Twitch, if our listeners don't know, Twitch is an app. You know, it's a place you can go online that allows you to watch other people playing video games. So rather than going into a stadium, you actually go to this site, Twitch, and you can watch other people playing video games, which again, people will think, why would you want to do that? But it's actually pretty entertaining because they're really good. And the most interesting thing about Twitch is not just watching the game, but there's a stream of comments that are happening about the game. So it's not necessarily the players who are making the comments, although that also happens, but you know, just people commenting on what they're seeing in the game. So it becomes a kind of a participative experience. It's not just watching as a disjointed audience member. You feel like you're part of it because you're communicating, you're participating in this game. So Twitch really kicked it off. Twitch, by the way, was bought by Amazon in 2014. It's probably one of the better acquisitions that Amazon made for just under $1 billion. And then we started getting, you know, games like League of Legends, which is one of the biggest games in 2013. You know, championships there, teams playing League of Legends were drawing tens of millions of people online. Then they started going into arenas and packing arenas of 15, 16, 17,000 people. COVID was interesting. I mean, COVID, when that happened, of course, the face-to-face competitions sort of dipped down quite a bit, but then a lot of that went online. So that massively increased the online audiences. A lot of growth over the last decade. And you asked about the games. So the popular games, League of Legends, of course, I mentioned that. Dota 2 is another one. That's a really Counter-Strike is a big one for teams. Fortnite is very popular because Fortnite, you can do it either as a team or as an individual. Other games like Overwatch, Call of Duty, StarCraft 2. There's also some sports games, FIFA. You can see teams playing FIFA in esports competitions. So there's all kinds of different games from different publishers.
And you know, you mentioned Dota 2. I know Dota 2 simply because it has a tremendous connection to AI, right? Dota 2 is another one of those games. It's a very complicated strategy-based game that you play as teams. And that was a game that OpenAI, that's a name that's a house that everybody knows today, right? It's a household name, that particular company today. However, when they were less popular, before they launched ChatGPT, they actually cracked Dota 2. I don't know how many of our listeners know this. They created bots which played Dota 2 at a superhuman level. And they actually entered a Dota 2 competition. By the way, I understand that the prize money for this Dota 2 competition was $60 million. It kind of knocked my socks off when I heard that. And OpenAI entered this not for the prize money, but they actually beat the top three teams in the world, which was unbelievable for me, right? So there's real money in this, you're telling me. And the players who are really good at this, they're superstars and they make millions of bucks like proper athletes do, right?
Serious money. Yeah, there's serious money. Dota 2, I think, was the first tournament that went over $1 million of prize money, but that's way back in 2017. Now, as you say, it's 40, 60 million. This is big, serious money. And there's serious money in the sport in general. You know, you have sponsorship companies like Red Bull, Coca-Cola, you know, Intel, Samsung sponsoring Microsoft, of course, because Microsoft has the Xbox. Microsoft bought Minecraft and more recently bought one of the biggest publishers of games, Activision Blizzard. You know, they have games like Call of Duty and Overwatch, StarCraft 2. But then also, you know, more surprising sponsors like, you know, BMW, you know, Mercedes-Benz, Mountain Dew are also sponsoring. So yeah, there's a ton of money in this sport. And you also, like any sport, you have kind of, you know, the Michael Jordans or the Leo Messis. You know, you have these kind of superstars that have huge followings as well.
But Mike, do you think these games, these sports, these athletes will be considered legit by the quote-unquote traditional organizations? So for example, do you think we'll ever see esports at the Olympics?
Yeah, this is a good question. They are becoming more legitimate for sure. The Asian Games have esports as a demonstration sport, and it's very active. The Olympics is challenging for a number of reasons. Now, the Olympics movement, you know, realizes that this is very popular. They've experimented with it. It will not be an official event in the 2024 Paris Olympics, but there is an Olympic esports series, which is not an Olympic event, but it's sanctioned by the IOC. They had an event in Singapore in June 2023 that was very popular. So there is a possibility that it could become part of the Olympics, but there's a few things that need to be overcome. There are a few challenges. For example, you know, there is no governing body for esports, which makes it challenging. So each sport has different rules and regulations, so it's hard to standardize those things. There's, of course, a lot of violence, right? You can't imagine a shoot 'em up kind of game being part of the Olympics. And most of the popular games are kind of, you know, have guns in them. So the Olympics don't want to be associated with that. So they have to have different types of sports. There's also, I think, a perception issue that a lot of people still feel esports is not really sports, right? It's just a bunch of kids, most of them overweight, sitting in front of computer screens, which, by the way, we'll talk about this later, maybe is not the case. There's an issue of the fact that most popular games are actually commercial games. They're owned by publishers. So there's, you know, this idea of the Olympics being controlled by commercial entities. There's an element of that. Doping, Amit, you know, we don't think about doping in esports, but there are actually a lot of issues with doping, performance-enhancing drugs. Of course, you need to have a lot of attention, play these games over a long period of time. So there are doping offenses. There are, believe it or not, checks for doping in a lot of these events. You know, they have to pee into a cup before they get on stage. Cheating, hacking, as you said, OpenAI, you know, figured out a way to beat the game. So how do you avoid cheating and hacking? So there are issues that have to be overcome before esports can kind of move into the real mainstream as far as being part of, say, the Olympics is concerned.
That's terrific points, Mike. I just like to point something out from a different perspective, right? And again, this is not something I think that gets enough attention or is widely known enough. I was working recently with Sony, and you know, I was writing about their game Gran Turismo. And what they've now done in Gran Turismo, which I believe is an incredibly popular game, again, I'm not a gamer, but it's an incredibly popular racing game, is they have actually created an AI avatar that you can race against. And the development of this particular AI avatar basically pushed the limits of our understanding of AI and our technological advancement of AI to different levels. What's my point? My point is that in developing esports and creating a lot of this, we are actually contributing to the evolution of technology. So some of the things that Sony developed in-house in order that e-gamers can compete with an AI in Gran Turismo is going to one day see light of the day in things like perhaps, you know, autonomous vehicles. You know, it's going to impact our day-to-day lives. And that's something I think that does not get enough attention, which is the spillover of that technology into our day-to-day lives. It's amazing.
I think that's absolutely true. And we see it in the world of Formula One. You know, Formula One teams are not allowed to test cars on tracks. They're not allowed to test a car on tracks. They have like, you know, three or four track days every year and the Fridays of the race weekends, they can practice on the track, but otherwise they're not allowed to. So how do they test? They test in simulators. So Formula One teams have become really, really advanced in simulation technology and simulation capability. And those skills and those capabilities are being transformed over into the business world. And a lot of these Formula One teams now have consulting arms, which take the technology they developed in Formula One and applying them to real world business problems. So absolutely, yeah, we're seeing a spillover into the real world.
So what next, Mike? I mean, how do you see this evolving? My guess is this can only get bigger as more and more people who've grown up with this become adults. It can only get more popular, no?
I think so. It is becoming more popular. It's growing. Of course, there are some issues that need to be overcome. Gender representation is an issue. It is still massively, you know, dominated by men, by males, both in players and supporters and fans. There's a lot of efforts to try and bring more women into the game and ethnic minorities into the game. So I think that needs to happen. But overall, I think the future is bright for these types of sports. We're seeing a lot of corporate interest. As you said, the prize money is going up massively. The global audiences are increasing. And the thing is that, you know, young people, they're playing these games, right? So, you know, one of the issues with ice hockey, I'm Canadian, so ice hockey is a big thing for me. But it's really hard if you're in Nashville to get too excited about ice hockey because you're not playing it as a kid. But you are playing these video games. So then, you know, I think young people can relate to this. We're seeing universities now offering scholarships, you know, so sports scholarships, but now also esports scholarships. There's a strong focus on health and fitness now because professional gamers are extremely fit individuals. You know, they have nutritionists, they have psychologists, they have fitness trainers, because if they're going to be there for hours playing these games, they have to have mental and, you know, concentration and also physical, the ability. So I think this idea that it's kind of, you know, sitting on the couch thing is not necessarily true. And I think as technology advances, we're going to see more capabilities. Augmented reality, virtual reality is only going to make these sports more dynamic, more interesting, more exciting, more realistic. So I think that the future is bright for esports.
Well, folks, there you have it. Esports. Please join us next time when we take this thought into consumers. What does this mean for us? How is this helping our health? How is this helping us become better? That, once again, was Mike and Amit Talk Tech. If you'd like more information about this particular show or about IMD, please visit imd.org.
Thanks, everyone. See you next time.